Today we're going to have an update from our massive show that we did about the Catholic Land Movement. There was a Catholic Land Movement conference, so to speak, in August up in the beautiful part of New York, upstate New York. And Michael Thomas of Sharon joins RTF for the second time to give us the after action on the, what are you calling it? A collaboration, a conference, a movement? What is it?
It's the Catholic Land Movement Conference. So I guess a movement and a conference would be the most correct. But yeah, we had a conference just last weekend. From what I know, the Catholic Land Movement has had like a couple attempts at a restoration by various people at various times, and they seem to all be kind of like, you know, if you ever had a lawnmower motor that's hard to pull over, you know, a turnover, it's like you get a couple pulls and it like kind of starts, but then it doesn't. Then it kind of starts again and then it doesn't. Well, I really feel like the conference that we just had kicked, was the pull that took and kicked the engine on. So we had a conference that was spread out from the Auriesville Shrine, the Martyr Shrine up here in upstate New York, the site of the first North American martyrs, and my farm. It was attended by hundreds of people from all over the country, as far as California. So really from coast to coast and everywhere in between. We had people from Nebraska, Tennessee, Massachusetts, Michigan, you know, just on and on and on. Really well represented, a cross section. It was billed as a traditional Catholic conference, so the orientation of all the attendees were traditional. They were in their Catholicism, and as well as in their interest in farming, I would say. Although there was quite a few, you know, more contemporary market farmers or market interfacing farmers that were there as well. Some of whom we taught workshops, but so it was a 3-day event. It had two masses. Holy orders were present of several different varieties. So we were able to sing, chant the daily office throughout the duration of the conference. Two different masses and maybe like 20 workshop discussion groups and several like practical workstations, which taught people skills. Or really the focus of this conference was less teaching people things and more about building fellowship. So a lot of the skills that were presented were very, very simple and basic.
I want to pull up the schedule here in a second, but these pictures are incredible. I mean, you did have hundreds of people from all over the country who showed up, who have a thirst for this particular topic. Was demand in excess of what you could handle, or did you pretty much know who was coming and do you expect it to grow?
Oh yeah. So I think demand wasn't in excess of what we could handle, but it was in excess of our success was in excess of our expectations. And so several passes, Providence stepped in and like opened up the door to be able to do this work at a larger capacity. So at first it was just going to be a small little conference on my farm, we were expecting maybe like 100 people or so. Maybe we would have been happy if we got that. Very quickly, when we put out the word, we realized that it was going to be much more than 100 people, that it was going to be quite a few people. And as the planning moved forward, we realized that these people wouldn't be able to fit camping on my farm. And so everybody involved locally who was helping organize it kind of prayed on it and thought about it. And that is the moment where the Auriesville Shrine approached us and said, hey, we've heard about your thing. Feel welcome to be here. And so we moved the conference, the camping aspect of the conference, to the Auriesville Shrine. And that allowed us, at one point we like closed registration when we got this avalanche of interest. We were like, okay, that's enough. We can't take anybody else. But when the Auriesville Shrine accepted us as pilgrims and invited us, you know, there, we were like, okay, we can accept a lot more people. And it was at that moment that we reopened up the conference and got, you know, the registrations poured in again. And we're able to have camping there. through that, we discovered that there's an annual pilgrimage to the shrine that's put on by a broad number of different parishes, kind of bond together and holy orders and have this annual pilgrimage. One of the organizers from there helped us get food trucks. And so we were able to like feed everybody through the food trucks that came, even fish on Friday. We had a fish fry food truck on Friday. And so really it was very much, you know, there was a lot of things that just like fell into place that we hadn't necessarily planned, but like because of Catholic Fellowship and the roots laid down already by other people and by people's prayer and people's dedication and persistence, all of these doors opened for us and we were able to accept all the people. And so it blossomed into this very large event.
Let's walk through the schedule a little bit. I saw some stuff on social media as you guys were contemporaneously posting. I saw some kids doing Irish dance. I saw some talks. I definitely saw some mass. What all did you accomplish in these two or three days?
So the probably what will become a theme of the conference is like a single word to help guide contemplation. And the single word for this first conference was fellowship. The idea that very quickly became apparent to me as one of the, you know, key organizers in the process, that what we didn't want to bill ourselves as experts or to create a classroom environment where everything was kind of pointed towards the expertise of a single person, and that this first conference was better oriented and geared towards the idea of Catholic fellowship around these issues of the Catholic land movement, you know, which incorporates education in basic craft traditions, agrarian skills, domestic order, that was kind of what the conference was geared around. The best way to kind of achieve fruit in the first conference was not to cultivate like an expertise in classrooms, but rather to cultivate just general fellowship. And so and what that means was that we oriented how that practically looked in the conference is that we oriented every workshop became a discussion group. Every workshop became like a workstation in which the tasks were fairly easy and just gave an opportunity for people to kind of dialogue with one another, talk, kind of move laterally between things. A lot of the workstations had no like official stopping point. They just kind of like people laid fence and they stayed there digging fence holes. I mean, it only takes 20 minutes to learn how to set a fence post. But I find as a man that some of the strongest relationships that I have, some of my best moments of fellowship don't arise for me like blah, 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 talking with someone a ton. It arises just from working shoulder to shoulder with another man. And we work together. And sometimes it's quiet, but a type of bond develops from that. And we try to like cultivate that experience in the conference. So, you know, you set fence posts with someone for a few hours and you like them, you know, or you don't. But either way, a type of fellowship emerges between you and the other people who work together. And so that's what the conference was really about. And to that, you can see the schedule. If you put it up, you'll see the schedule. There's fence posts, hay by hand. There was herb walks where a nun kind of like taught people about different herbs. There was various discussion groups on everything, homesteading, the history of the Catholic land movement, the future of the Catholic land movement, domestic arts. Women got together and like a large group of women got together and kind of walked through basic like domestic order things like how to can or how to bake a loaf of bread or how to meal plan for your family, you know, cultivating the traditions that make a well-ordered Catholic household and cultivate the skills that make connection with the landscape and primary things, which is the essential goal of the Catholic land movement, you know, that make those things attainable. You can give a man a forest, but if he doesn't know how to turn that forest into a house or firewood or no one's ever walked him through it, well, the forest doesn't necessarily do much for him. And so part of the conference was connecting people with those kind of like traditional and primary skills, or at least thinking on that path.
What was the average skill set of the people who arrived? I mean, clearly, if you're going to drive across the country or fly or even drive a few hours, you have some interest in the Catholic Land movement. You have some kind of philosophical alignment with it. But in terms of guys showing up, and had anyone hayed by hand before? Had anyone set a fence before? Had anyone thought about heirloom seeds, or you know what I mean? Like, where was everyone at, just kind of generally?
The span is like people who are just being introduced to the concept of homesteading and the concept of the Catholic Land movement, and are interested in cultivating the skills related to those, are interested in cultivating and understanding a relationship with the Catholic Land movement, all the way to generational dairy farmers who have lived with things like the hay cycle or the nutrient cycle of the soil, or, farming is like a way of life, and Catholic Land movement scholars. We had people who had a much deeper understanding than I do of the historical precedence of the Catholic Land movement, its theological basis. Their IHS Press was here. There's a fellow from IHS Press, or at least related to IHS Press, and he was a wellspring of information, and he actually led the discussion, a group of the history of the Catholic Land movement. And so I'd have to say that there was a really wide span. It was everybody from like people who really, really knew what they were doing and people who were just entering these things. And so that, to that word of fellowship, one of my challenges to the attendees were like, make a friend, leave here with a relationship or the contact of somebody, and cultivate a relationship there. And I think that happened quite a bit. At least I was told that happened quite a bit between participants.
Sometimes when you start a conference in its first year, things are really rough. You run into roadblocks. Things don't happen the way you want them to. You're off schedule. A speaker doesn't show up. Something catastrophic happens. There's no place to put people, whatever, there's no food. Did you have any like huge major setbacks, or was it, more or less just kind of like the typical noise of running a conference, which is really not an easy thing to do?
I think it was mostly the typical noise of running a conference. It was interesting for me, the things that I was concerned about ended up not being a problem. I was very concerned about the parking on my farm, but all of the attendees seemed to negotiate the parking very easily. I put a lot of like thought into how we were going to do that and set up a whole roster of volunteers to help. And really, it kind of went off without a hitch. It was fairly easy, the parking. The unforeseen was like we had a developing schedule, as you said, as interest gathered. The schedule for a speaker, discussion group leaders and workstations continued to evolve as people brought their talents. A thing that I held forward is like lifting up every talent that was brought to me. Every person I would talk to, I would say, do you have a set of talents? How do I lift them up into the effort of the Catholic Land movement? And so one of the things that was interesting to me was that very Catholics, very organized people, as we tend to be, many of them printed the schedules like weeks before. And so as the schedule evolved, they failed to keep up with the evolving schedule. And so when the conference day came, there was many people who had like conflicting schedules. And in certain cases, I would review a schedule and like not even know which one was right, because they were spread across different time periods of printing. And so in the future, I think I actually work in trades, and we always stamp plans like do not build. I think I need to have like a very big draft notice on any plans that are posted online. And then the conference day have like a giant board. And we had like multiple discussion groups and workstations running at the same time, sometimes up to like 5, 6, 7 in a given session. And so I think having a board that people got that information off of, rather than the conference schedules that they printed and the ones that we provided, and then there being a conflict between the two, just a general board, like a train station that people could like look at. I think that would be a great aid to the organization of the conference. And we need more than on the lunch day. We only had one hot dog truck on my farm because it was kind of tight. I think next year we need to just open up the food trucks and not have a set lunch time, but just kind of say like, get food, you know, skip a session and get food. You know, there's just going to be sessions running throughout and not create a bottleneck at lunch. Those are my two biggest organizational takeaways. I hope that helps somebody else setting up a conference.
Well, you said next time, and I'm kind of zeroing in on that. So it seems like there's demand for this to continue. Is there going to be a second annual conference or maybe like twice a year? Will it also be in the same location? Are you open to, you know, the movement kind of bouncing around cities, sort of like how the Blessed Carl Conference has gone to two cities now and possibly will go to a third city next year?
Yep. I think, you know, my, yes, there will be more conferences, whether or not it's annual or twice a year or seasonal, or, I think the, what I see developing, and this developed from like discussion groups at the conference, you know, different people's various discernments that they brought to me privately and thinking about how, you know, what the next steps are, is that I think that, Catholic Land Movement chapters will likely arise on a parish basis, that people will take this energy back to their individual parish and create a Catholic Land Movement chapter that carries on the four-point mission of like what this restoration of the Catholic Land Movement entails. And then through that, there'll be the opportunity for maybe regional workshops and everything else. And then probably once a year, maybe twice a year, like a big conference that brings all those various groups together to cross-pollinate one another, talk to each other. There's been interest in creating a periodical that maybe publishes quarterly. There's been interest in in ongoing workshop series or vocational trainings. There's a whole slew of interest. It did develop into like kind of like a 4-point plan, and I do see that post the conference. I've already submitted kind of bylaws and missions for legal review to a lawyer who came forward and offered their services pro bono. So I suspect that we'll kind of like formalize an organization over the next month or so, and then continue helping parishes develop their own Catholic Land Movement chapter. There's already two attendees who have taken it back to their parish, talked to other people, said there's enough interest. We're going to get a group together. We're going to meet in a week or so. And then we'll report back to you what develops there. And so I'm very excited. The momentum and energy of attendees was intense. You know, people are very, very geared up. Again, the original Catholic Land Movement, if you're familiar with that history, is, I think we talked about it in that first big group that we did, the original Catholic Land Movement was a reaction to industrialism, right? People were being corralled in cities. Pope Leo XIII writes his encyclical and talks a kind of about around the rights of properties, the importance of farming, the importance of the Catholic household seated in rural property, and the Catholic Land Movement. And that was all in a response to the consolidating powers of industrialism. And so the Catholic Land Movement in its original manifest was really a reaction to those consolidating powers trying to carry action out of Pope Leo's encyclical and the various movements of the time. I believe that the reason why there's so much interest in a restoration of the Catholic Land Movement is that we're experiencing a very similar consolidation of power in the contemporary sense. And it's not industrialism. It's more what we're seeing in the emergence of, you know, global technocratic tyranny. And that takes its manifest in everything. You know, everyone understands that that's happening globally. And so people are reacting to it. People are saying, that's not the future that I want for my family, you know? And so they're looking for outlets and paths for participation towards a movement or an orientation or fellowship in an orientation that leads away from that kind of technocratic dystopia that is clearly being pushed by consolidating powers. And so that's why I think the Catholic Land Movement is having such it's in the way that the original Catholic Land Movement is a reaction to industrialism. This restoration of the Catholic Land Movement is a reaction to global technocracy. And it's powerful. It was much more powerful than I expected a response.
What would you recommend for folks as an introduction to the Catholic Land Movement? Do they read McNabb? Do they read Leo XIII? You know, is there some easier to digest introduction to it. Because here's my observation why I'm asking the question. You become trad and then you start changing the way that you live. Suddenly you start changing how you dress and your comportment and your decorum. Your language cleans up, hopefully, you know. The focus on virtues and elimination of vices starts to happen. The spiritual life grows. But some of the more like practical things also happen. Trads tend to be more interested in organic eating. They tend to be more interested in growing gardens and composting and suddenly having chickens. And this is all kind of like a natural evolution of a return to true religion. But I think some of this happens, Michael, just like subconsciously or not in a deliberate fashion where we say, hey, philosophically, I want to live seasonally and I want to be closer to the earth. And I don't think too many people are thinking to themselves, you know, the restoration of realism and John Senior and Thomism and all of that, right? But they're doing it. So how do we put ideas to the things that many of us are just naturally drawn to and doing so that we can explain A, why we're doing it to people who think that we're crazy? You know, a lot of people who become trad, their relatives think that they're crazy, their siblings, their mothers or whatever. And then B, to more deliberately step-by-step walk through down this path that you're sort of like otherwise just stumbling through.
Well, I'm going to answer that in a general sense, and then I'm going to get very specific. So in a general sense, once you align yourself with a traditional ethos, and particularly a Catholic traditional ethos, you begin to orientate yourself to a long discernment. When I say long discernment, I mean a long discernment that carries itself before you, right? Part of becoming a trad Catholic is you say, hey, there's all these discernments that have happened before me that have arrived at certain truths, and those truths are powerful, and I don't understand them all, but I understand that they're there. And I want to partake in them. I want to understand them slowly. And part of that is the truth of, you know, that natural order is a choir that sings the glory of God. And so as we orient ourselves in a way more towards God, we orient ourselves more towards a type of witness and participation with natural order. And so you see people very organically, as you described it, like, hey, I want to like raise animals. I want to grow my food. I want to, I want my household to be ordered. I want, you know, the way I present myself to be thoughtful and kind of carry with it a particular order. And so it is a natural path. You know, you start to participate in a meaningful and intentful way with the communion of creation, right? And so communion is at the very center of our Catholic faith. And so you start to participate in a meaningful and thoughtful way with those things. You find yourself in a position of like, hey, I'm a steward. I need to take care of the land I live on. I need to think about the way that I eat. I need to think about the way that I talk to people. I need to think about the way that I carry my role and responsibility in my family. And so, it's a very natural trajectory for someone who's drawn to order and piety to then find themselves orienting themselves to natural order and a participatory and stewardship role of creation. So that's a very, very broad, you know, my kind of theological understanding of why this happens to people. To provide guidance to that, and particularly what the Catholic land movement is, sometimes papal, you know, encyclicals can feel thick to people or hard to digest, or they're written in a prose or a time or an error that doesn't sync up exactly. And you know, not everyone's meant for heavy theory, but everyone is meant for participation in the real way with the traditional, you know, mystical body of Christ. And so where do people go who aren't going to read theory or be Thomasists or anything else, right? I would really suggest the Fleet of the Fields book, which is very, very easily digested. You know, I would even encourage people to read Leo the 13th. I think it's fairly accessible. But if you find that like too much, I would really, there's a very short book, I believe it's IHS Press, called Flee to the Fields, which is a compilation of McNabb and others' writings that speak to the original Catholic land movement born out of the English distributist movement. It's a very beautiful collection of writings that are easily digestible, that provide great context for contemplation and really ultimately are a call to action, are a call to like very simple contemplation, you know, a very simple action rather with creation, you know, and a relationship with your role as a steward there. You know, and the other thing I would do, you know, to encourage people is just continue to, if you're drawn to like raising chickens or gardening, or, you know, I always think of the Carthusian in them, in their cell, you know, that they cultivate a relationship with it. It's like bitter herbs, you know, barely edible bitter herbs is the garden that many of them tend. And through that, they have a witness and steward of creation that's very powerful. And so it could be, you know, it could be any way, just start to grow things. Start to take care of things, start to think about your relationship to the soil and where your food comes from. And that's, you're able to do that. You don't have to be like a full self-sufficiency homesteader to begin to incorporate that type of awareness and discernment into your life.
Yeah, I think all of that is fair. And to describe the movement as reactionary against the consolidating forces, I think is probably the most accurate way to describe what we're seeing right now, with the, you know, the various moves of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and, you know, the new world order that continues to emerge with, you know, puppet states like Trudeau and Biden and the rest of them.
Absolutely.
What is your hope for the future of the movement? How can people who didn't attend the conference remain engaged, get involved, get plugged in, and get some of those resources that they maybe missed out on by not attending?
So please visit over the next, you know, couple weeks. Please visit CatholicLandMovement.info, which is a website that we put together for the conference, which over the next little bit is going to have a transformation into a more organizational website. More even important than that is, you know, reading Flee to the Fields, familiarizing yourself with the history of the Catholic land movement. Past that, and even more important than both of those things, is talking to people in your parish, building fellowship, and saying, hey, you know, there is this thing happening called the Catholic land movement. It happened once before in history. Do you want to check it out with me? Are you interested in, you know, in having a garden and offer your help to like a neighbor or a friend to like help weed their garden, help mend a fence, help, you know, fix a sticky door even, you know, it can be very, very simple. There's deep resonance in that willfulness to offer charity to our neighbors and to like, you know, work together with the people immediately around us. To help people have a vision right here, right? So you're already listening to this for 20 minutes and you want like a concrete vision of what the Catholic land movement is. It's the restoration of the Catholic land movement is really 4 points. It's the education. So there's an education of primary traditions, the idea of craft traditions, domestic skills, and agrarian skills. So education is the first point. The second point of the Catholic land movement in its restoration is connecting Catholics with land. So we're hopeful that this organization will actually help Catholics have the means to get the land. Now, what does that look like? It could look like internships. It could look like grant programs to help people acquire land. It could look like holy orders or other Catholic institutions who have access to large pieces of land and need help stewarding them. But getting the laity Catholic back on land to participate in a primary sense with the soil. So that's number two. Number three is fellowship. Right. There's no, if I want to know every Catholic farm around me, Where do I go to know that? If I want to put out a call to say, other Catholics, I carved a timber frame and I need help lifting it. I'm turning over a field and I need help planting pumpkins, things like that. So where's that repository of fellowship? You know, how do I cultivate fellowship, conferences, other things like that? So that's number three. And then there's number four, which is really the encompasses all the other ones, which is that what makes the Catholic land different from any other kind of like agrarian movement, and what makes it different and what makes it special and what really, really unlocks the truth, beauty and goodness in it, is that in all the things that we do throughout the Catholic land movement, we focus and center Christ, the Catholic sacraments, and God. We put that at the center, the beginning, the center, and the end of everything that we do in related, in relation to the Catholic land movement. And that's what we did this past weekend. Daily office, masses, prayers at every discussion group, you know, really grounding the whole thing in a Catholic morality, grounding the whole thing in kind of a Catholic ontology. And like this, we are Catholics who are doing this with one another. And so those are the four points. And so if any of those speak to you, like, get involved, hit that website, get in touch with me. I think my phone number is all over the website. I'm happy to talk with people. And I want to thank you, Mike, for giving me the opportunity to reach out. You got a great platform. I love your show. And it's a real like honor to be here. And I really feel like it's the opportunity to connect with more people. I know this is speaking to a lot of people. I witnessed it this past weekend. The spirit is moving in lots of people. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to help give it some direction and some course of action and common good. So thanks, Mike.
Michael Thomas of Sharon Springs, New York. Thank you so much for joining us. And just a quick endorsement of one of the things you said, Flee of the Fields is a great book. It's a collection of essays that are indispensable. You can see I have highlights in mine for various things, although I'm sort of focused on usury. So all my highlights have something to do with usury in my upcoming book about that topic. But thanks so much for doing what you do. And let's periodically check in with the Catholic Land Movement. And keep us abreast when the next conference is scheduled, especially. Let's get it as advertised as possible.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take care. God bless you. Thank you.